Hi, this is Cooper Mueller from the Princeton Tigers, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, and featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts. And my Johns Hopkins homie, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, we're back. After last week's blip in the schedule, we have six top 20 matchups to preview. And one of those features a big Ivy League tilt between Cornell and Princeton. We'll chat with Princeton's standout midfielder, Cooper Miller, as the Tigers prep for the Big Red. And inside lacrosse, Dan Aber will join us as our guest picker as we preview the nation's biggest games. So Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, we're back and I feel better about the schedule this week. I'm pumped up and ready to go.
You weren't really excited about last weekend, but last weekend turned out to be pretty good, right?
Well, yes, it did turn out to be pretty good. There was a thriller in College Park once triple overtime. But maybe one of the best games featuring two of the best teams, it was really hard to see that game. And I had to miss that one and just read about it. And what I heard from all accounts is that I didn't miss a whole lot. The game was great, but, you know, there's a lot of talk about things other than the game afterwards.
You're talking about, I assume you're talking about Penn State, North Carolina.
Yeah, Penn State, North Carolina.
It's unfortunate that... Bottom line, you had two terrific lacrosse teams. There were no penalties in that game. No penalties. No flags on either North Carolina or Penn State. None.
Can you remember a game that's happened, either when you, as a player or a broadcaster, where you
watched? I can't off the top of my head. I'm sure it's out there. No, I can't. And there were so many other good things that happened in that game. I mean, in Penn State, the defense held Don Petromalo to one goal. And did a really, really nice job on him. I thought North Carolina, Leif Hagerup was outstanding for North Carolina, short stick D midi. I think he had 5-6 calls turnovers in that game. And then, you know, Brady Wambach against Reed Gills was a great face-off battle. And Wambach got the better of Gills a little bit, but Gills also won some face-offs late that allowed Penn State to stick around and keep that a super competitive game. So, yeah, the Crown Classic was the event, and the game was really, really a fun one.
Awesome. Well, let's get right into the game previews. We have normally do about five. This week we have six.
Well, wait a minute. Before we go into the game previews, I got to just – your boy's burning the candle at both ends this week. So we're doing this on Wednesday night. I just want to let people know what's going on.
Okay.
So tomorrow night, because it's all television related, tomorrow night on Big Ten Network, 8 o'clock, I'll be with Taylor Cummings to do Maryland Penn Women from CQ Stadium, because the field hockey lacrosse complex for the women, the field is being replaced for the Maryland Women. Then Saturday, I'll be with Joe B. up at Penn State for Penn State Maryland, 3 o'clock on Big Ten Network. And then a very special Monday night from Charlottesville at 7 o'clock, Dartmouth, Virginia. I'll be with Matt Ward, a former Wahoo. We'll be on, I think it's ACC Network. So Matt and I. So I got I got my own March Madness going on over here, you know, with the tight windows and back to back to back. It's going to be good.
That's amazing. You're getting a lot of work.
It's great. I'm very, very, very fortunate, very lucky.
I mean, I heard everything you said, but I somehow got stuck on the fact that Maryland is replacing their field in the middle of lacrosse season.
I didn't ask for details. That complex just got a facelift. I want to say maybe 2 years ago, the interior, the locker rooms, the meeting rooms, it's really, really outstanding. And now they're replacing, because it's that old school AstroTurf, a very fast track for field hockey.
Yeah.
And then obviously a fast track as well for lacrosse. It's the only AstroTurf facility I've ever seen with a full sprinkler system. They're constantly watering.
Yeah. So for field hockey, they use water cannons. That's like the standard thing at big time field hockey plays on.
Okay.
Old school AstroTurf. It's real, real thin and real light. And they purposely hose it down with water cannons to make the turf as slick as possible. So if you'll watch like elite college field hockey, and there's like every time they flick the ball, there's like water coming up.
Okay.
And that's on purpose.
Wow. So, I never asked. I'm just always in the spring whenever I'm down there and they're using what you now call the water cannons. I'm just dodging it because it'll soak you.
It will. All right. Let's welcome into the show our guest analyst this week, Dan Ahburn. Dan is at Inside Lacrosse. We used to work together. Dan, you left Inside Lacrosse several years ago, but now you're back. What'd you do in the hiatus there, and what brought you back, and how's your role changed at IL over time?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. I'm pretty excited to do this. Kind of feel like I've been at the end of the bench waiting for you guys to put me in here. So,
save the best for last, Dan.
Yeah, glad to be in here. Y'all want to win, put Ahburn in. So
you kept working. You kept your eyes on the prize. You kept getting better every day. And you know what they say is preparation plus opportunity equals success. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm now the social and digital manager here at Inside Lacrosse, kind of a fancy term for anything digital related. I kind of have a hand in. So I'm a photographer, I'm a videographer, social media manager, and I watch games and contribute as much editorially as guys like Terry, Matt, Kevin, Dan Kaplan as well. So yeah, I started out at Inside Lacrosse as an intern. I think back in 2014, worked with Dan, I think for about 5-6 years. And then I left, I went to the NFL. I worked on their social team for 3 seasons. And then I actually, after that, I got a job at JP Morgan on their social team. But after about a year there, I said, I really do miss sports. So I kind of, reached out back to IL, said, hey, like, if you guys are interested in having me back, I'm interested in coming back and giving back to the sport, everything that I've learned, over the past couple of years. And an opportunity, came up, and, now I'm back with IL and doing more than ever, it feels like. So it's been pretty awesome being back in lacrosse.
Welcome back home.
Feels so did you, the NFL thing intrigues me. Like, so social or your media, did you like the NFL films? Obviously that was, Steve Sable and, but that, did you ever meet the guy whose voice, on the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field, the Warriors lined up from one another? Did you ever meet that guy?
No, I never met that guy. I don't think, I didn't meet too many people, but you'd just be walking around the NFL office and you'd see famous people. Like, everybody would kind of freak out when you go into the cafeteria and Goodell just getting his lunch. I forget who I saw. Oh, it was Chris Carter. I just walked by him in the hallway and I was like, whoa, I know that guy.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. He was just there. I think I was at the combine once. I was stuck in an elevator, not stuck, but had a very lengthy elevator ride with, Hutchinson from the Lions. I forget his first name.
Aiden Hutchinson. Hutchinson.
Yeah. At that point, he was, top 5 draft pick lock. So I was so that was pretty cool. There was, some interesting run-ins there while I was there. So
that's great. Yeah, that's not cool. not like roaming the halls of Inside Lacrosse though, when notables stop by the power plant.
Yeah, not sure who I would run into there.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean. Flint. Depends who, what type of fan you're. There's some lacrosse fans. There's some listeners of this show who would be like, "Oh, that would be so cool."
Yeah,
get a tour of Inside Lacrosse. That's great, Dan. We're happy to have you back, and thanks for what you do to cover the sport. And there's some great games to talk about. So, on to our game previews. The game previews are brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm, specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Gents, there are 4 games on Saturday and 2 on Sunday. The first game features Ivy League clash between number 10 ranked Cornell and number 3 ranked Princeton. They're both 1-0 in the Ivy League, getting wins last week in the openers. This game will be at noon. You can see it on ESPN Plus. Before we talk about this game, let's bring in our guest this week, Princeton standout defensive midfielder Cooper Miller. Please welcome into the show an All-America short stick defensive midfielder for the number 3 ranked Princeton Tigers, Cooper Miller. Cooper, thank you for joining us on the Defline Dixie podcast.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Cooper, there are high expectations for the Princeton lacrosse team. You have them. Fans have them. A lot was said after the season opening loss to Penn State, but the Tigers have rebounded with 5 straight wins, including wins against 3 teams that at some point this season have been ranked number 1 in the country. How would you characterize the 5-1 start of the Tiger season?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a really tough first game. Came out early, we got punched in our first game, and that's always a really tough thing to do in the beginning of the year because it makes you really reevaluate a lot of your thoughts about your team going into the rest of the year. So going into that Maryland game, we knew we needed a big rebound, and it had obviously been quite a few years since we had last beaten them. So that was a really, really big one for us, and we practiced really hard that week. And coming out of that game, we knew that we were legit and we were the team that we thought we were, and we were able to carry that into the 2-game weekend, which is really hard. And now as we're coming into the rest of our league play, it's really, really important for us to keep winning and, you know, keep getting better as a unit, because the best teams aren't the teams that are peaking in March and April. It's the teams that are peaking in May.
Your dad is a Princeton basketball legend, 2-time yeah. Ivy League Player of the Year. When he graduated, he was the 2nd all-time leading scorer in school history. And your older sister graduated a couple years ago, and she was on the Tiger women's lacrosse team. Has it always been your dream to play for the Princeton Tigers, or did you even seriously consider other schools? Like, how did, like, what was your growing up like a Princeton, like a little junior Tiger life, and how did you end up at Princeton?
Yeah, I definitely grew up a Tiger. I grew up coming to the basketball games and coming up for reunions when I was a little kid. And then as I opened up my recruiting process, I almost didn't really want to come to Princeton. I kind of wanted to do my own thing and separate myself a little bit from my mom and my dad. And then Princeton was, funny enough, my last visit. And I almost committed mid-visit. Like, I halfway through the visit, I was like, I am coming here. I love these coaches. I love this school. And there was really no other option for me. And I had a meeting with Coach Madelon at the end of the visit, and he kind of alluded to the fact that don't commit on the visit. So I mentally checked out, all right, we're going to wait. Walked out of the building, told my parents I'm coming here, and called Coach Madelon the first thing the next morning.
And how did your parents feel when you said that you wanted to be a Princeton Tiger?
I think my dad was a little shocked as I had voiced the fact that I might want to do my own thing. And I think my mom knew all along. I don't think she was too surprised.
So what I didn't even realize about you is I know you played basketball in high school, right? You played on a really great Radnor team. But each fall until lacrosse starts, you play on the Princeton basketball team the last 2 years. What's that experience like? How do you manage 2 sports? How did that come about as like a walk-on? Did the coach know you were a player and call you up? Was it your former teammate, Jackson? Yeah. That like said, so like this we got to get this guy on a team. Like, I just need to know more about this.
Yeah, so I was in high school, obviously played with Jackson Hickey at Radnor, who was really great player, now one of the best players on the Princeton team. And I had gotten to know the Princeton basketball coaches through him and through my dad as well, and came into Princeton wanting to do this. And as it became an option, I was super grateful to both coaching staffs, as they've been very flexible throughout the fall, as I'm some days doubling on practice. Sometimes I have to miss one practice or the other, and it can definitely be a lot in the fall, but it's so worth it. I love both sports so much, and being able to do that has really elevated my college experience and just been so much fun for me.
How does playing the one sport help you in the other sport? Like, you know, what you do as a short stick defensive midfielder is a lot about like basketball defense, right?
Totally. Yeah. I think you look at a lot of our D middies on our team, and most of us played high school basketball and at a pretty high level. So whether it's understanding the slide packages, how to play zone defense, or simply just on-ball man defense, it really translates a lot. Both sports do. I remember when I was first learning how to play lacrosse, my dad didn't really know what it was, but he was able to understand it pretty quickly with his basketball brain. And I think that it translates a lot with, especially in the defensive midfielder position. So that's been really nice for both me and a lot of our D-middies as well who play basketball.
Yeah, so one of those is Jackson Green, great high school basketball player, great football player, who also plays a fall sport for the Princeton Tigers, playing on the football team as one of the top receivers. You guys form a special like short stick defensive midfield unit. How do you guys make that work? Like, again, what's fall practice like without you guys there? How do you get that going? And then who are some of the other guys on that unit that make you one of the best in the country?
Yeah, I mean, JG is really special. He's not there all fall, and he's able to come in early January and just immediately make an impact. I'm pretty confident, very confident that he could be a three-sport Division I athlete if there was enough time in the day. So he's just an amazing player overall. And then within the rest of the D-mid unit with Owen Fisher and Quinn Kramer and this freshman Caden Southworth that's coming up, we've really been able to put in a lot of time together, and we've a really special unit. I think there's 10 to 12 of us total every year. And we have, you know, we're like a little friend group, and we're hanging out a lot and bringing it together before and after each practice and really able to work together as a whole unit and help each other understand more. And if I mess up, I know that a freshman's going to tell me that I messed up. And if a senior messes up, that I know that they're able to help everyone out. So we're able to grow really well as an entire unit, but it can definitely be a little tough in the fall if some of us are missing, but we're able to come in early January and not miss a beat.
Now, your close defense unit probably doesn't get the love that it deserves. A lot of people talk about Ryan Kroddick, who's in his second year starting in goal. But over the last few years, there's been a lot of guys like Cooper Kissler, Pace Billings, Colin Wolschein, who have graduated or moved on. Talk about that close defense unit and the impact that they're making this season.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the close defense unit this year of Hunter Spies, Finn Fox, and Jack Stahl, who we've seen has been getting his praise a lot recently, and they've been holding it down this entire year, really protecting us as short sticks, protecting Kroddick and Cage, and they've just been really solid. And they also, like the D-middies, are putting in their time. They're a very close unit, and us all together have just really been able to grow and develop as a full defense this entire year and really play as a unit instead of playing individually.
On the other end of the field, you guys are putting up a lot of goals, and you have a lot of contributions from many different players. Obviously, Nate Kibiri gets a lot of attention. Chad Palumbo gets a lot of accolades. Who are some of the other guys that are leading the Princeton offense?
Yeah, I mean, Colin Burns is really the quarterback back there. He's, I think some of the other guys are scoring more of the flashy goals. He's finishing on the crease and really shooting at a high percentage and getting everyone else the looks that they deserve. And out of the midfield, we have a lot of really good guys returning. And this year we've also seen, as of late, Jake Vanna and Porter Malkiel, two guys that have previously not played too many big minutes and have coming off multi-goal games in a row and really just making a big impact there for some of the younger guys that are stepping up a lot this year.
This weekend, you have a huge game against Cornell. They're the defending national champs. They've gotten the better of you in this series lately. What does Princeton need to do to turn the tide and break the streak against Cornell this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, no one on this Princeton team has ever beaten Cornell. So I think that there's definitely a fire among all of us, and we really want to come out there and win this game. And we've already proved to ourselves this year that with Maryland, the streaks can be broken, and there's no team that simply matches up better than you, whether in its schemes. And, you know, we're coming to this game practicing hard all week, and we understand that we have to prepare and work hard. And at the end of the day, it's going to come down to what team wants it more at the end of this game. So that's got to be us on Saturday.
All right. Are you ready for some quick hitters?
Yes, I am.
More lighthearted questions. All right. What's your all-time favorite sports team?
I'm a Philly guy, so the Eagles. Go Birds.
All right. What is the best Princeton lacrosse tradition?
In my opinion, the best Princeton lacrosse tradition is our trivia we do, started by David Smith, one of the other short stick D-middies. And whenever we have a home game, the night before, we order Chipotle or Qdoba. We all go into a big lecture hall, and two guys from the team will create four rounds of trivia for the entire team. And we'll hang out for 30 minutes to an hour. And really just that night before, it's a good way to settle in, get rid of some of the nerves, hang out with one another, still be able to talk about lacrosse, but also just put it to the side a little bit the night before the game and really have fun with your teammates and get super close on those Friday nights.
Are there any particular standouts in the trivia? Individuals?
We got a freshman riser, Gus Von Mesch. He's a big brain, so he's pretty good. A lot of the walk-ons on our team, they've put together some good teams before, and so if you see, there's a certain couple guys, Gus Von Mesch, Wilder Bergen, this is a big one. You like to see him if he's on your team. Jim Williams, a couple of those guys, they can really make
some good names. So at most schools, they bring on walk-ons. They'll let walk-ons on the team because they can help boost the academic performance of the team. Does that even happens at Princeton too? Like Ivy League schools like Princeton, they still require them? Okay, question for you. Why do you wear number 66?
I don't have a true tie to 66. I came in freshman year. Coach Kotz, our director of operations, texted us a whole list of numbers, and 66 was the highest number. And I was like, all right, that seems pretty cool. I think I'll take that. We were texting in our group chat before freshman year of who's going to take what number. And so guys were looking, okay, maybe if I want zero, I'll put a good second option. So I was going through my second options. Turned out no one else wanted 66. So I was able to get that number.
And what number do you wear in basketball?
Also 66.
So I don't think I've ever seen another 66 in basketball. I saw a picture of you like shooting in a basketball game with a 66. I was like, whoa. Okay. I love it. If your family's in town for a game, where's the best food in Princeton? Like, where are you going to get a bite?
If we're going out for a nice dinner, Roots Ocean Prime's amazing steakhouse. But a lot of times after games, right up from my house, there's a place called Tiger Noodle that I eat from pretty often. Go get some good orange chicken or some sushi. They got sushi there too at Tiger Noodle, so they really hold down the fort for me.
Okay. Another food question. Who is the best cheesesteak in Philadelphia?
Most people are going to go Pat's and Geno's.
Not me.
I will say that Johnny's has been a stock riser recently for me. And they've opened one up in Bryn Mawr, kind of near the house. So I'm pretty excited about that. So I'm gonna put them in my one spot.
That's a good shout out. At what age did you start to beat your dad at one-on-one?
He would say never. I would say probably my sophomore year of high school, I think I could beat him. He would attempt to back me down. I think to this day he would still say that he would beat me. So I'm down to one-on-one him whenever. I don't know that he wants that smoke anymore, but he's going to be watching this. I'm sure that he'll have some words for me.
Oh, I love it. I knew I'd throw that. That was more for me and your dad probably than. All right. If you were doing a 3-on-3 tournament, you can't pick Jackson Green, right? So he's on a different team.
Yep.
Who are the other two lacrosse players you're picking to be on your 3-on-3 team, to play his team?
No question, Owen Fisher first. He's got crazy range. He'll never go inside the three-point line. He's big enough to go inside the three-point line, but he won't. He's got some really good range. I think that Colin Burns will be mad if I don't add him on my team. I'm not gonna, but he's got the hustle. Is he going to score many points for us? No, but he'll get a lot of offensive rebounds. He's going to dive for loose balls. But other than that, I think I'm going to throw Zach Friedman on my team. Good all-around player. He'll get it done for us.
Love it. All right. Who is the best chef or cook on the Princeton lacrosse team?
I'm going to put a tie for two of my roommates. My roommate, Colin Vickery. I watched the Logan Hip podcast where you're talking about a lot of guys have Instagrams. Colin Vickery has an Instagram, Tiger Lax Barbecue. I'm an avid follower. He's got merch made for us. He's got aprons and hats. He's got his own overalls with his merch on it. So that's pretty cool. But Colin Vickery and Mark Marino's cooks a great steak, makes us a lot of wings, but Colin Vickery can really make some good brisket. He fried us a turkey for Thanksgiving. He gets it done. He's a Texas guy.
I gotta check out his Instagram account. Yeah, I love it. All right. What's your favorite Ivy League road venue to play in?
I like playing at Penn. We went down there last year. It was pretty special because I grew up going to those games at Franklin Field. It's kind of fun. You're walking down, but you're crossing the street in your full lacrosse gear coming from the away locker room, which is kind of a weird vibe, but I liked it. I really liked it. But that stadium's so cool. It's hard to beat it. So close to home. A lot of my family friends and my family will come down to that game. So being able to see them all there is something pretty special for me.
And you've had some success in that stadium lately too.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Who's in your March Madness Final Four?
Okay, let me think here. I got Kansas, Florida, Michigan, and Arizona. I've been on the one seeds recently. Been on the one seeds due to last year. I think in the NIL era, way less upsets. That's my suggestion. But yeah, I'm high on Florida right now.
You've played with a teammate. Yes, exactly.
I think Xavier's a winner. I think he's going to help out there. And I'm pretty high on Kansas too. We played them this year, and that was a crazy experience. So
that had to be really cool. That stadium, is that the best basketball venue you've ever played in?
Gotta be. I've played in there. I've played in the Palestra a couple times in high school. That place is really cool. But I mean, Allen Fieldhouse has to be one of the most historic places in all of college basketball.
Yeah, for sure. All right, last question. If I walked into the Tiger locker room, who's running the aux and what's playing? What am I going to hear?
This year it's been Hunter Spies on aux, and it could be a whole range of stuff. You could come in, you could hear Big X the Plug or some random Eminem. You could hear Tyler Childers or you could hear Metallica. He's all over the place, but he assesses the locker room really well, and he gets us dialed for practice, lift, and before the games.
Great answers, man. It's great talking to you. Cooper, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly Dixie podcast. Best of luck to you and the Tigers throughout the season.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Big game in Princeton this week, guys. Cornell has won 6 straight in this series in Princeton, going back to 2018. We'll start off with you, Dixie. Princeton's a 2.5 goal favorite. Over under is 24.5 in this one. What's your take on this game?
A great matchup. And it's interesting. The conversation really centers around who's number one, Notre Dame or Richmond? Notre Dame or Richmond, but nobody's really putting Princeton in that conversation. And you can argue that Princeton has maybe the most impressive wins of that trio. Cornell lost 2 in a row to Richmond, aforementioned Spiders, and then got walloped by Penn State, but responded in a really strong fashion by knocking off Brown last weekend, 18-9. I still think Cornell's trying to figure stuff out with all that they lost off the national championship team, whereas Princeton really knows who they are. They return so much. And the spots where they've lost players, Mackesy in particular, they just plug in a Chad Palumbo, and there you go. So, you know, Princeton is a team that really, like when you talk about Richmond, it's they don't have any holes. And then when you talk about Notre Dame, it's they're a lot better than people thought they were going to be. I think Princeton is a combination because when they open the season, getting really handled by Penn State, that game has proven to be a little bit of an aberration, if you will, with their performance over the week. So I think they're a team that does have some holes, but does a great job of covering them up, mainly in the form of Ryan Krotik. And I do think the defense is improved. And this offense can play with anybody in the country with the way they move the ball, the spacing, the athleticism, different ways they can beat you. So this is a big one. I think Princeton is, I think it's at least from what we've seen so far, Princeton and Harvard have established themselves as at the top of the league and in the Ivies. And then it's, you know, trying to figure out who's the number three team.
The one thing that I think about when I think about this matchup is how, and I think in the Ivy League championship last year, both Cornell and Princeton's goal song was Freebird. And they scored probably like 30 goals in that game. So it was just like that guitar solo from Freebird for like 2 straight hours. This is going to be a great one. I feel like Princeton's going to come into this game pretty motivated. I think they've obviously lost, like you said, 6 in a row to Cornell. But I think when you especially look at the last 3 meetings, the 2 last year were really high scoring games, really competitive, but it just kind of felt like Princeton could not outscore CJ Kirst in that Cornell offense. And then the last time they actually played at Class of 1952, Sherrard Stadium, was that, I think it's Matt Dooley, the long pole for Cornell, just gliding down the field in the final seconds and scores, kind of just stole the game from what was really a back and forth, and either one of those guys could have gotten it. So I think Princeton's going to come into this one with a lot of fire. Like you said, Dixon, I think Cornell is still figuring a lot out. And it's because, you know, replacing CJ Kirst is a generational task. Like, he has just been, he was so good, and replacing that kind of production has been, has proven to be, take a lot more time than I think a lot of us expected to. So, but that being said, I think Princeton this year, and you mentioned their offense, it's great. It can compete with anybody in the league, but I think that they're more comfortable this year winning slower paced games, more defensive oriented games. You know, Jack Stahl has been excellent for them. He absolutely owned his matchup against Joey Spallina in that notable Friday night game. You know, he held Owen Duffy to a respectable 1 goal, 3 assists, but it kind of felt like, it really felt like Duffy could not run past him and had to resort to passing in order to get that offense moving. And then Ryan Craddock's been playing at an All-American level. And, you know, Cooper Miller and that stable of really athletic short sticks, I actually think that they have about 3 to 4 guys on that short stick rope unit who can really play and really match feet. I honestly thought that was the difference maker in their game against North Carolina, where they had a lot of these young athletic midfielders, and it's just like, nope, you're not getting by us today. Like, we run this town. So this will be an interesting one because, you know, when you look at Cornell, it really is based on that attack duo of Goldstein and Firth. And I'd be interested to see, you know, who Stahl gets in this game. Is it Firth or is it Goldstein? Because I feel like both on a good day are extremely dangerous players. But how does that matchup, you know, go out to the rest of the defense, and how do they handle the rest of that Cornell offense?
All right, Dan, I'm going to take the Princeton Tigers in this game to win. Who do you like?
I'm going to take Princeton as well, but I would say that I think that they're going to win a tight game. Like, I think it's only going to be a 1 or 2 goal difference.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a one goal game. So Cornell might cover the 2.5 Princeton advantage, but I think the Tigers break that streak and get a win in 2026. All right, moving on to our next game. This game's at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Number 7, Ohio State, 7-1. On the season, will travel to New Jersey to play number 17 Rutgers, who's 7-2. This is the Big Ten opener for both schools. Fans can catch it on the Big Ten Plus Network. And Ohio State comes into this game now as a 3.5 goal favorite. Dan, I'll let you take this one first.
Yeah, this is an interesting one that I don't have the best read on, because honestly, Rutgers has not played the greatest competition this season. You know, their best wins are their first win against Jacksonville and then Villanova. And obviously they got smoked by Princeton about 10 days ago, lost 20-9. So it's hard to really calculate how they stack up to top tier competition. And that was honestly a criticism that Ohio State faced in their first 5 or 6 games of the season. But they've since played really great competition, Georgetown, Notre Dame. And then they won the rockiest of rock fights against Denver on Thursday night, proving that, you know, in a battle of 2 really great goalies, they had a little bit more extra firepower on offense. I think for Rutgers, it's a little bit too much of the Colin Cordillo show. And when you're going up against a defense that has, you know, Caleb Fialk in goal, Cullen Brown on defense, and the rest of that unit has been really good despite the loss of Bobby Van Buren. Like, I really don't think they've lost a step at all. So I see this one being pretty low scoring, 2 great goalies, Carden Stoller and Cage for Rutgers. But ultimately, I just think that Ohio State and that defense is going to have an answer for an offense that kind of feels like a bit of a one-man show at this point.
I think that's a good analysis of this. I love some individual pieces for Rutgers. Colin Cordilla has been fantastic. I mean, honestly, he's putting together first-team All-American type season with the production that he's getting. Joe Youngerkiss, one of the best shorties in the game, and then you have Carden Stoller, one of the best netminders. But those are individual pieces. And when you talk about Ohio State, like, that is a team built on defense, but they have a lot of support on the offensive end. You know, Marin Yeh is the guy that gets the headlines, but you just have other guys just contributing, and that their balance and their depth is more robust than Rutgers is. And I know we're going to talk about Maryland and Penn State, But we're facing a situation where we're down Bobby Van Buren and you know, we haven't gotten official word yet. There's whispers, though, that Will Schaller is you know, going to be done. So that's a bummer because they're both outstanding defensive players. But I think that, to your point, Dan, Ohio State has rebounded very nicely. You know, not only were they missing Van Buren against Denver, but I believe Blake Island didn't play either. And he's a terrific short stick defensive midfielder as well. So this game, Ohio State and Rutgers, always seems to be a roadmap for how they play. Whoever wins this game tends to have better success in conference as you go down the line. So that's going to be very indicative of this one. But yeah, let the games begin in the Big Ten. Low scoring, grind them out, physical, black and blue. And the coaches love to describe it as rock fights. So who's gonna be David and who's gonna be Goliath in this one?
Ugly boy lacrosse.
Interesting that I didn't mention this earlier on purpose. The over under in this game is 19.5. That's the lowest we've seen, Dix, all season long when we've been picking these. So I do see this as like, I think you're both right. It's going to be like a 9-7 type of game. And I like the Buckeyes to win a real low scoring game. Dan, who do you think will take this one?
Yeah, I'm wholeheartedly with you there. I think the Buckeyes win. I think I saw the line was like maybe they were favored by 3 goals. I think it'll be closer than that. I think that they win by maybe 1 or 2. Like conference play, it's always like, you know, that these teams are going to play close. And I think Rutgers is going to throw everything they have. But I just think that overall, that defense for Ohio State will stand tough.
Okay, moving on. Dixie, you teased this game earlier, number 11 Maryland against number 9 Penn State at Panzer Field. This is the Big Ten opener for both of these teams as well. It's at 3 o'clock. You'll be calling the game on the Big Ten Network. And Penn State comes in as a 1.5 goal favorite in this one. It's the whiteout at Panzer, Dix. You got to be excited for this.
Oh, yeah. Panzermonium running wild in Happy Valley. That's a really neat venue. They typically get good student support. I'm not sure the status of spring break, if that'll affect the attendance. But, I mean, injuries is the big storyline coming into this game. Hunter Aquino has missed the last 2 games for Penn State. He's got 12 goals and 5 assists on the season. And then we're talking about Will Schaller on the other side for Maryland. What is his status for this one? So, you know, two stars out. So it was interesting last weekend doing the Maryland-Virginia game. Virginia had it in their records that it was the 100th all-time meeting, and Maryland said, no, it's the 99th. This is a similar series in that they can't agree on the all-time history of this series. And honestly, Maryland has really owned this this series since these two teams became members of the Big Ten. This is a golden opportunity for Penn State to get Maryland at home a little wounded and try to pick up a big W. I do think that Riley Reese, if Will Schaller can't go and Reese, it holds the form. He came in the game late last weekend against Virginia, and he really seemed to stabilize the interior of that Maryland defense. I thought Mikey Alexander did a really good job on Brendan Millen, and Peter Lake stepped up as Virginia kind of got away from their game plan late, decided to go one-on-one with him because Schaller was out, and he was able to win the matchups particularly with McCabe Millen. And Brian Ruppel all along has not been the problem for the Maryland Terrapins. So when I see Maryland 2, the other injury that looms large is Eric Spanos. Will he return? I think they really miss him on the offensive end because right now they're getting nothing out of the third attack spot for the Terps. And midfield-wise, Jack Schultz has yet to really round into form the way he was playing last year. You know, this is a Penn State team. You know, Kyle Lehman, Jack Iantuano, talented freshman. Then you have players like Ferrone and a kid that I really like is Andrew Beard. I watched him play throughout his high school career at Severn, and I was always impressed with him. Then you're talking defensively, Alex Ross. And look, he had an opportunity maybe probably with it to be a second team All-American with all the defensive talent returning and the way that they were projected to play and were playing. Now with these injuries, I mean, Ross could be a first team All-American. He did a really nice job last week on Owen Duffy. That was a fun matchup to watch. So this game is going to be entertaining. It always is. It'll be a battle at the face-off dot. I thought Henry Dodge struggled a little bit last weekend against three guys from Virginia, Mets in particular. And Reed Gills is just really, really good. Like, he's a very, very good face-off. So a lot of subplots to this one, and I'm looking forward to calling it.
Yeah, subplots, I think, is a great way to describe just so many of the nuances of this game. Honestly, I'm really looking forward to this game. This is probably the game I'm most excited for this weekend. I think it's just two teams that have a lot to prove in the national conversation, I think. You know, Penn State still is a bit of a confusing team because it's like one day they look like they could be the best team in the country, and then the other, it's like we can't score that many goals. So, like you said, they have a prime opportunity here against a wounded Maryland team to get a statement win, and a win that's going to matter, you know, down the line, you know, on Selection Sunday if you don't have a Big Ten championship in hand. So Penn State, like, they have one of the most explosive offenses out there, and it's been performing despite the absence of Hunter Aquino. It just feels like they have like a stable of guys that they can throw at you, and they all have some sort of way to cause a matchup issue. Like Kyle Lehman and Jack Antuano are the speedy, shifty guys who can dodge a guy. You know, Michael Ferrone is a big downhill guy. If he's, you know, coming at you with a full head of steam, he's going to run right past you.
And I didn't realize how big he is, too. I forget how big he is every time I watch him play.
Mm-hmm. And then you got Chase Robertson, the transfer from Utah, who I thought was more of a perimeter shooter, but he's got a lot more in his dodging bag than I expected. And he's really stepped up in big moments, I thought. And then you've got Liam Matthews, who's got the craftiness. So it's like, they really just have so many ways that they can beat you. So, you know, Maryland's defensive staff has a pretty tall task, even without Aquino. And I don't really know his status for this game at all. But if you add him back into the mix, it makes it even more difficult. And then, so obviously Maryland's going to be without Will Schaller in this game. How long is he going to be out? It's looking like he could be out for the whole year, if some of the rumors are true, and no Spanos as well. So they're going to be forced to continue to experiment with personnel on both sides of the ball. And I think obviously the offensive side has been the whittling there, and the tempering there has kind of been more under the microscope. I thought Matty Higgins, who's a freshman, I thought he had a really great game against Virginia. But like you said, like, Jack Schultz hasn't really shown up. I think he had an injury like early in the preseason or something like that that's kind of kept him out of practice. So he hasn't really gelled with the offense. But yeah, it's kind of like you don't really know what you're going to get from Maryland's offense. I thought that they looked more efficient against Virginia. They fed the ball better than I've seen them in games, in recent games. But I don't really know what we're going to get. So that offense has a lot to prove in this game, and they could find themselves in a shootout with Penn State. So,
well, who do you like in this one, Dan? Who are you taking?
This is a tough one. I'm going to say Penn State. I think in a game where, so there's two things. There's another thing too. I think the big variable for Penn State is the freshman goalie. I feel like they kind of tend to ride with how he plays. I think if they can get a decent day out of him, they're going to beat Maryland. But I think the ultimate kind of X factor here is the fact that it's the whiteout game at Penn State. I think that, you know, Maryland coming in a little wounded, I think that could, all else being equal, I think Penn State has that slight advantage, and that's what's going to prevail them. But I don't see them winning by more than two goals with that.
Yeah, I think it'll be a close game. But like you said, there's too many question marks for Maryland. A lot of things they need to answer. We'll see if they can do it in this game, but I'll take Penn State in the whiteout as well. All right, guys, our first three games were all conference games as teams head into conference play. Our last three games we're in preview are ACC versus non-conference teams as the ACC gets started with their conference season next week. And the first one we'll talk about is the last game on Saturday, number 16, Army, 6-2 overall. They'll go down to Chapel Hill, play number 5, North Carolina, who's 7-1. Game's at 4 o'clock. Fans can catch it on the ACC network. And UNC is a 3.5-point favorite in this one. Dan, your thoughts on this game?
Well, first of all, Army back-to-back losses for the first time since the 2020 season. I think we've taken for granted how consistently good they've been over the past few years. But they've lost to Boston University 6 times in a row now. So Army is a bit of a hard team to get a read of because they continue to do really well out of conference, but stumble against teams in the Patriot League that feel more or less built to beat them. Like, I think that they've established themselves as the standard in the Patriot League, and so everybody wants to beat them. And for a team like Boston University, they've kind of figured it out. But the interesting thing is that Army has beaten Carolina in this game by 1 goal the past 2 years. So are we going to see another close game in this one? I'm not sure, because I think what we saw against the past 2 weeks is that Army is struggling to kind of figure things out after they graduated a really substantial senior class that featured pretty much all Americans at every single position on both sides of the ball. And how do they come out against a Tar Heel team that is much more veteran? It has also a stable core of really young midfielders that are stepping up each and every single week. If it's not Luke Bear, it's Anthony Rayo, who stepped up in the Penn State game with his first hat trick of his career. And then you've got Gary Merrill. I don't know. This is a hard game to get a read on. But if Carolina is the team that I think a lot of people think that they are, they'll go and they'll beat this Army team. And they'll do it in a pretty compelling fashion. I think they're 3-goal favorites. I think that that's probably the right line. I think that they're probably, I think I'm going to pick North Carolina this one. They'll probably win by 3 or 4.
I think if you're Carolina, you're kind of bumming that Army's lost 2 in a row, you know, because this is a proud Black Knight program. And to your point, they've won the last 2 years against North Carolina, both in Chapel Hill and then up at Mikey Stadium last year. It's typically a very physical game, and the weather's going to be 76 degrees, cloudy, but it's alumni day at Chapel Hill, so they will be honoring some of the national championship teams. So it's going to be, you know, an exciting, festive atmosphere in Chapel Hill. And I like what you said about Carolina in a game this past weekend against Penn State where you only get 1 goal from Dom Petromal. I think Owen Duffy had 1 goal or a handful of assists. I can't remember the stat line, but you had other players step up making plays. And the one person that missed the first few games of the season due to injury is Caden Harshbarger, and he's a terrific player. So once he gets settled and on track, that's just another weapon that can be utilized for the Heels. Question marks in terms of injury. Chase Salucci's missed the last couple of games. Will he be back? And that gives Carolina a little bit more flexibility with Peter Thoman because he's been playing down close. You can put him between the lines. So that's an interesting subplot. But the last 2 weeks have kind of been Army in a nutshell. You mentioned they're out of conference success, and they've had that. And then they, you know, the last couple of years they've stumbled in that Patriot League tournament and been on the outside looking in come Selection Sunday. So huge game for the Black Knights, huge game for Carolina as they prepare for ACC play. And then they also, you know, I think they've got Harvard as well still left on the docket. So this will be a fun one down at Dorrance Field. Part of a doubleheader too. I believe the North Carolina women play Boston College. So a full day of lacrosse at Dorrance.
Yeah, sounds like a great day set up for Tar Heel lacrosse fans. Dan, you picked the Tar Heels. I agree. I think this is all Carolina in this game, and I think they roll over Army in this one. Moving on to Sunday's games. Number 14, Denver, is going to come out east again. They're 4-2. They'll take on number 6, Duke. Still a bit of a mystery to lacrosse fans. They're undefeated, 7-0, ranked number 6. This game's at 1 p.m. Fans can catch it on the ACC Network Extra streaming. And Duke is a 4.5-goal favorite in this game. Dixie, I'll let you start on this one.
That's a fat line when you consider the defense that Denver has been able to play. They've only given up double-digit goals one game, and that was their last game against Syracuse where they lost 13-12 to the Orange. And you're exactly right. Duke continues to rise in the polls. Not that that means anything, but it's more when you look at their schedule, it just doesn't get you excited. It just does not get you riled up, to watch Duke lacrosse. This game, yes. And that's no disrespect to Duke's opponents. We're used to Duke playing Denver and the last couple of years, Penn and Princeton, those games early in the season. But, I mean, when you look at this Duke team, they have played St. Joe's. Jacksonville is a tough out. But then the last couple of weeks, it's just kind of like, eh. But they pick up in weight class with Denver this week. And then they begin ACC play, and they still have Cornell left on their schedule. This is a good Duke team. And much like Notre Dame, who's a little bit more battle-tested, we might be saying in 2 or 3 weeks, this Duke team is better than we thought they were going to be. After you lose guys over the last couple of years, like Brennan O'Neill and Andrew McAdory, you still have McGuire and Sloat and Johnston and really, really good defense. They face off well. So maybe they're the ones flying below the radar. And this is in years past, that's kind of been Denver. You know, they have a pretty robust out-of-conference schedule, and then they get into the Big East play, and they kind of disappear, and then they pop back up again. Not that they've become Big East, but, this is a really, really good Denver team built on defense. They thrive on the 6-on-6. They may need to incorporate, if they can, a little bit more transition in this ball game to get one or two against Duke. But I'm excited for this one, basically to really kind of get a measuring stick of where Duke is right now.
Yeah, I think to put it plainly, this kind of feels like Duke's first real big game, like against a real bona fide top 20 team. Like the teams that they have beaten, like St. Joe's and Jacksonville, kind of been in and out of the upper tier of the top 20. So this feels like their first real big test. And yeah, their schedule has been not great. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately, but like it's March. We're halfway through March, and it feels like I haven't thought about Duke lacrosse at all. Like, what's going on there? And I actually looked at their schedule from last year today. And by this time last year, they had played number 19 Michigan, number 8 Princeton, number 14 Penn, and number 14 Richmond. And it's March, it's going to be March 21st, and they're playing their first, like, what feels like their first real bona fide top 20 team. So I don't really know a whole lot about Duke and how that they stack up against the top tier competition. And I think you're right in the sense that, like, yes, in a few weeks' time that we could be talking about how dangerous this Duke team is, but I think they've got to prove it first. And, this is, I think, one of their first big real tests. I think this one's going to be a rock fight. I think that when you look at Denver, they want to win the game 10-8. And when I also look at Duke, they have, great goalie in Patrick Jamison, Charlie Johnson. I think this one's going to, I don't know what the over under is, but I think it's going to sail under. I would think that there's probably 18 goals or less in this game. And the weird thing about Denver is, like, I think that they are a Grayson Manning performance from beating anybody in the country. Like, I think that kid has the ability to elevate a team like few goalies can. We saw it, this past summer with the way he elevated Team Canada in that gold medal game in the under-18 championship. This one's going to be close, but I think it's going to be very low scoring, fairly physical, not unlike that Ohio State-Denver game that we saw just a few days ago.
So who do you like, Dan? You have to make a pick here.
I'm going to go with Duke. I think them playing at home is a big deal, and I do think that they are talented. And the one guy who I don't think either me or Dixie has mentioned is Aiden McGuire. Best short stick mini in the game, can absolutely change things for anybody. I feel like when you have all the players on the field, like, he is just a massive difference maker, and I feel like he finds a way to make a game-winning play or a game that really affects the outcome in this game.
And this is the toughest one of the week for me, and I've been staring at it all day. If this was in Denver, I would definitely take the Pios. I'm going to take the upset. I think I've taken the favorite team in each of these games. I'm going to take the upset here And I think Denver pulls it out in a real low scoring game. It is a 22.5 is the over under. So if Duke's a four, it's a 4.5 goal favorite, 22.5. We're talking, that's like.
That's a, like Dixie said, that's a crazy line for a team.
Yeah.
Really, like, I haven't even thought about this season. Like, they've just kind of been sadly irrelevant.
Well, what's funny is we generally talk about the biggest games every week on this podcast, and we haven't talked about Duke, and it is March 20th because they haven't.
God, you're right.
They haven't played a top 20 opponent yet.
Wow.
So it's really crazy. Well, two teams that we have talked about a lot this season because they've played a lot of top 20 games is our last game of the weekend. Number 13, Georgetown, who's 3-3 now, travels up to the Dome to take on number 8 ranked Syracuse, 7-2 overall. This game will be at 1 o'clock also and be streaming as well on the ACC Network Extra. Syracuse comes into this game as a 2.5 goal favorite. Over-under is 23.5. Dan, your thoughts on this game?
Really excited for this one too, because I feel like Georgetown might just be coming into form right about now. I think one of the things that nobody ever mentions about Georgetown is that they've consistently been not very good early in the season for the past several years. When everybody thinks about Georgetown, it's like, oh, they run the table in the Big East. They win the Big East championship. They go to the NCAA tournament, and they just don't happen to get to the Final Four. But nobody ever mentions that they usually drop a game in February. And, you know, I was at their game against Ohio State, and that was very much a defensive-oriented battle. And it kind of felt like they just didn't play the cleanest game, and they could have won that game. But it just kind of didn't happen. It didn't materialize for them. But give credit to Ohio State and Big Tasty and Go. That was a great, great defensive battle. But I think Georgetown might be turning that corner right about now. They played Loyola this week. They had a great showing. I believe it was 14-7 win. They've had a lot of guys in and out of the lineup that are finally getting more stability in terms of guys consistently, you know, getting the start, playing. And after a milk carton game against Ohio State, like, where is this guy? Liam Connor has been really good recently. He had some shooting issues early in the season, but he just had 3 goals and 6 assists against Loyola the other night. And that was also coming off a pretty strong game against Albany in a midweek contest. So he's finally coming to form. Rory Connor has been pretty much shouldering the load offensively for that team with guys in and out. He's been kind of playing at a Toronto level, to be honest. One of the highest points per game producers in the country. And then they have Jack Schubert as their perimeter shooter. He can really stretch a defense. And then Jake Bickle, who's missed a few games, he's also been excellent. He had 4 goals against Loyola. He also had a great game against Ohio State when it kind of felt like they were keen on the Connor brothers. And of course, you know, Georgetown has had a pretty solid defense with Ty Banks, Anderson Moore. That's been a fairly consistent, they're not the best, but they've been pretty good and pretty consistent in keeping teams to, you know, no one's going to really score like 15 plus on Georgetown, I think, in any game of the season. And it'll be interesting to see how they perform against Syracuse. And obviously this is their first game home after a 6-game road stretch. Who would ever thought Syracuse would go on a 6-game road stretch early in the season? And I think that they still have a lot to prove too. I think a lot of people still don't think that Syracuse is a Final Four caliber team. Like, I see it, but I think that they have to get a lot better. I think that their defense has been okay. Like, I think there's points where they look like a really great defense, and then there's some games where they kind of just are average. And we obviously know what Joey Spillane and the offense can do. I think that ever since that kind of dud that they laid against Princeton on Friday night, that they've been a lot better and that offense has moved more efficiently. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it could be a fairly high scoring game, like a 14-12 type of game. But I'll save my pick for later.
First home game in the Dome for the Orange since February 13th. How about that?
You know,
and in the interim, at Harvard, at Princeton, at Penn, at Hopkins, at Air Force, at Denver. So a little West Coast spring break action. And now they return to the Dome on March 22nd against Georgetown during March Madness. I feel like we should have Roni Cicely against Patrick Ewing, you know, old school Big East basketball, you know, Georgetown, Boeheim against Thompson, you know. But instead, it's going to be Spallina versus Banks. It's going to be Mullen versus Prince. It's going to be, McCool versus Moore and, Dwan versus one of the Connors. So I was able to watch the Loyola Georgetown game this week in person. Ted Moon sighting, by the way, in the flesh. Face off Yoda doing his thing at Ridley. Georgetown jumped out 3-0. Loyola called timeout, tied it 3-3. And then Georgetown went on a run to go up 9-3. And then Loyola incorporated a zone defense in the second half that really gave the Hoyas trouble and slowed them down. I can't imagine Syracuse playing zone defense, especially at home, but something for John O'Durner. I'm sure he's going to watch the film of Cuse and, I'm sorry, Georgetown and Loyola, and maybe has that in his back pocket should Georgetown go on a run. But I'm like, you know, I'm looking at guys for Georgetown like Jordan Ray. You know, he had a really promising start to his career, and I know he's had some injuries, but he's fallen off. Is it Patrick Krogan? I know there's another brother at Carolina. I'm not sure if he's still on the team anymore, honestly. Like, I didn't really see him much, if at all, against Loyola. Much like Rutgers is top-heavy with Cardilla, Georgetown has become a little top-heavy with the Connor brothers. You mentioned some other guys that have stepped up, but those are the two that if you can limit them, you got a pretty good chance of winning the ball game. A classic, you know, two institutions that have a storied history, maybe not so much in lacrosse. They do have some history in lacrosse, but really it's on the hardwood. But this I'm excited to settling in and watching this one on Sunday.
I'm going to take Syracuse in this one, Dan. Who do you like?
Someone's going to call an upset, so I'll be that guy. I'm going to take Georgetown. I feel like they win like 13-12 or something like that. I don't know. I just think that they're finally starting to feel themselves a bit.
There you have it. Six awesome games plus great games up and down the schedule. Games like Richmond at UMass is something to watch. There's games up and down. Find your favorite team, make your plans, schedule your weekend around the TV. All right, it's time for this week's Give and Go. Dan, Dixie and I are both big Family Feud fans. Love Steve Harvey. That's my guy, right? I was watching the other night, and they had a rerun on, and the question was, name the greatest rock and roll band of all time. Now, I'm asking this question, and you guys, there were eight answers on the board, right? Eight answers on the Family Feud.
That's a lot for a Family Feud category.
Right, so they ask 100 people, like they survey, and it's out of 100. So this is not, we're not asking like the editors of Rolling Stone and Spin Magazine this. So frame your responses, set your head into like general American people answering this question. And let's see if you guys can get the top eight answers on the board as you can work as a team, just like the feud, before you get three strikes. And it has to go over to the other family, the Flynns. All right, so
Dixie and Abird. You already know the answers.
Dixie and Abird working as a team. See if you can get the top eight answers before you get three strikes.
Who wants to go? Dixie, you go first. Go first.
Sure. I mean, the Beatles has to be in there.
All right. Number one answer. Number one answer, Dixie.
Yeah.
I'm going to follow the Rolling Stones.
Bing, ding, ding. Number two. Great call.
So look at us. Two for two.
Yeah. Rolling. Okay.
Big Country. No, I'm just kidding. Culture Club. No, I kid on that one as well. The Doors. How about that?
Great call. I love The Doors, but that's not an answer I think a lot of people are going to give out.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'm going to go with Pink Floyd. No way.
Yeah, Pink Floyd is not on there. And actually, one of the contestants on the show said that, and they got an X on it.
Wow. Van Halen. All right,
down two strikes. You got to think.
Like, Van Halen. Come on, man. This list is cooked.
It is cooked.
Who is Family Feud asking on the street?
Yeah, I'm telling you, I tried to explain. We got to frame this in like the framework.
A very wide demographic.
The people who are
So cool in the gang. Cool.
They're not wild answers. They're not like out of left field. But there were some that I was like, that's not going to be up there, and it was.
Huh.
So
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin is the number three.
Okay, I was going to go next.
Said that after Pink Floyd.
You want to take some more guesses, or?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, okay. I'll take a few more guesses.
It's more fun.
Cool in the Gang.
No.
They're a great band, by the way.
Is it's strictly kind of, like
rock and roll? Think of name the greatest rock and roll.
Oh, it's band all rock and roll.
Greatest rock and roll band of all time. So you got set.
How about AC/DC?
Number four answer.
Good there call.
You guys are starting to hone in a little bit.
All right.
So you got to think like there are no new bands on here. Nobody who started their career from the 90s on, let's just say. Everything is like 60s, 70s, 80s, right? Or based on who they're asking. So you got half of it. You got the four easiest ones, though.
Okay.
You got to try to get the four hardest now.
The Cow Sills.
How about
Steve Harvey would just be looking at you right now, Dixie.
Yeah, he's laughing. Good face. Who
are you talking about? I love Steve Harvey too, by the way. He's awesome. You know, I play Family Feud online every day. One game.
I learn something new about you every time we talk. Tell me about this game.
Oh, God. I mean, it's probably right in front of us and we're just not thinking.
How about the Eagles?
No. They're not on there, but I saw some like post about the Eagles, and they really are one of America's greatest rock bands. Like, if not the best, then I mean, they're in terms of album sales. Like,
yeah, that's why I'm surprised they're not on the list.
But man, they were so good, so good. Their harmonies, their guitar playing, musicianship, it was so good. Yeah, not on the list, but they probably.
Oh, okay. How about the Beach Boys?
No.
Queen.
Number five.
All right, I'll take Queen.
Queen is great.
And I know, I think you've seen this band, Dixie. Kind of, these are...
Journey.
It's not Journey. But I know
you...
There are three American... These the last three are all Americans.
Oh, that helps.
One band's from L.A., one band's from Boston, and one band is from... I don't know where that... Maybe New York? New York or
Boston is Aerosmith.
Boston. Aerosmith is the number eight. You're right.
The LA one, Metallica.
It's not Metallica.
Damn. No, they're from San Fran.
Yeah, you're right. My bad.
They're Motley Crue.
Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses.
Wow. Okay. No, that's good. Damn good taste.
And Kiss is number seven. Where's Kiss from? Are they from New York or?
Yeah, I think they're all like Gene Simmons is from New York. Ace Frehley's from New York.
So again, that order, eight top eight. Beatles, wow. Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, Queen, Guns N' Roses, Kiss, and Aerosmith in that order. There is a note underneath that says, some viewers noted in surveys that Metallica, Pink Floyd, The Eagles, and Creedence Clearwater Revival were often omitted from the top answers despite their popularity. So like those were common answers that people gave to them, but they didn't make it into the top eight answers on the board.
Who would have been your top eight? That's not a bad top eight, actually.
No, it's great. I mean, I've never been a big Kiss fan. I like every one of those other bands. It's like awesome.
You've never been in the Kiss army?
Nope.
I feel like Kiss is like a bit of like smoke and mirrors there. I think people know Kiss because of the makeup and stuff, but like they're not the most relevant in terms of like musical output. Like, love their music, but you know. I don't know if they're on the board with the Beatles.
Yeah, I mean, I put the Who would be on there. Again, there's no bands from like the 90s on, so like, you know, Pearl Jam,
Nirvana.
Yeah, there's no Nirvana. There's no Metallica. There's no.
Yeah, I would put like Van Halen in there too. Like, I think.
Yeah, well, Van Halen was one of my favorite bands. Yeah, for sure.
All good answers.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that seems like a good place to stop. A reminder that D-Fly and Dixie Podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Special thanks to this week's guests, Dan Aber and Cooper Miller from the Princeton Tigers. Please like us, subscribe, give us a shout out, whatever you do to tell people about it. Tell a friend, share the love. It's free. And you can reach us on Gmail at dflyingdixie@gmail.com by email, or you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyingdixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.